Okay, go ahead.
Okay, I'm Murph, and I'm an alcoholic. Nice to be here. Carol! Oh my God, I couldn't believe it when I saw her on here. I love Carol. I don't know if she's a regular, but I love her. Ego and God. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was spiritless. I had no family that would talk to me. I had no friends. I had no job. I had no money. I was sleeping on the living room floor of a friend's house. And I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I heard a message in Alcoholics Anonymous, and the message that I heard was, just don't drink and go to meetings and your life will be okay, and that turned out to be not my experience. I'm going to make a statement now that people are aghast at a lot of the time, so listen to the statement really carefully and you'll understand what I'm talking about. I do not need God not to drink. I repeat, I do not need God not to drink. I didn't drink for 2 years in AA without God, and I went 8 more years with AA in AA without God. What I need God for is to live a happy, joyous, and free life sober. My problem was never drinking. My problem was always sober. I had a problem with life before I took that first drink, and when the drink was done, I had more problems. And it was because I wasn't working the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the main purpose of this book is to enable me to find a power greater than myself. And if you use the word enable means to find the means to. So if you have a problem with the power greater than yourself, working these steps through this book is going to help you find the means to that power. But I have to do this stuff. When I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous, I thought I had a problem with God. But I didn't. I never had a God. What I had a problem with was your God. I had a problem with your religion. I had never myself had a relationship with God. So I came to find through these steps that I can't just believe in God. I have to find and have a relationship with God. In the second step, it talks about, which my sponsor pointed out to me very carefully the third time around. I've been sober for 11 and a half years this time. A completely different sobriety. And he told me, Murph, he goes, you can't sit on your sofa and think God is going to fix your life. Right? He told me you have to seek and you have to search and you have to find something that's comfortable for you. You have to find that power that you can trust and have faith in. And in order to do that, your ego has to be smashed. Because my ego is trying to keep me separated from my fellows, from my God, and from my true self. Because of my circumstances growing up, and a lot of us go through trauma either as a child or later on in life, that causes me to find that drink. See, when I found that drink, all my trauma as a child, right, it was gone. What alcohol did for me was stop this. And our big book tells us that alcoholism centers in my mind. So it was never situations that were my problem. It was what I thought and how I perceived those situations that was my problem. I could turn any situation into the worst thing possible, or I could turn the smallest thing into the greatest thing ever. But it was all from my mind, and alcohol stopped that. I wasn't thinking of the past anymore. I wasn't thinking of the future anymore, and alcohol brought me to now, which is the most important place to be, which is where Alcoholics Anonymous tells me is the greatest place to be, where I'm at this moment with God. And so that was the allure of alcohol. That's why I drank. I drank and I drank and I drank and I drank and I drank to shut this off, because I hated it. It was always going. It was always talking. It was always telling me things. And so my ego starts to create this false self. And this false self is protecting me from you. And this false self is protecting me from everything out there. Right? And it's just keeping me in this little, it's almost like it's keeping me in this cocoon that I can't break out of, but it's protecting me. And so I like to call it the land of Ur. So and my ego is the king of the land of Ur. And the land of Ur is, I want to be faster, better, handsomer. I want my hair to be thicker, curlier. I want to be smarter. And I live in this land of Ur trying to attain these things. And what I come to realize is that there's always someone with more Ur. And it's like chasing the wind. You know? The more I want, right? The more I want, the more I want, the more I want. And what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to fill this hole, this spiritless hole inside of me with things outside of me. And my life is, through my ego, my life is dependent on what you think of me. And my self-worth is dependent on how I compare myself to you. And I live this life out there, and what an awful life, and I need the alcohol to stop it. You know, chasing more always leaves you with wanting more. And that's what I would do. And I didn't know it at the time, but what I was doing was searching for God. And each one of these things would be my God for that moment. But I have this unsatisfiable mind. There's a man in the second edition in the preface. His name was Harry Thiebaud, and he was a psychiatrist. And I highly recommend anyone reading the Thiebaud papers, because he talks about what we were like as alcoholics. He talks about my characteristics. One of them is grandiose. I'm this grandiose person. You know, Bill. In his story, oh my God, he was just like the king of grandiosity. You know, I'm going to lead men. I'm going to, you know, vast corporations. I'm going to be in the golf club. I'm going to overtake Walter Hagen. If you don't know who Walter Hagen is, I'm going to overtake Tiger Woods, would be what it is nowadays, you know. And he always had these grandiose thoughts, this fantasy world that my ego puts me in. I live in these fantasies, right? And I live in this place where I'm always in situations, how do I put this? I will say I can't do this, or I'm not smart enough, or I'm not good enough, and it's this thing that I do to let. It's almost like I'm setting myself up for a letdown, and when I fail, because I don't believe it, because I've said these things, right? The pain isn't so bad, and so I set myself up for failure all the time. And this is my ego. It's my ego. And so I get to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've built this character, and this character is dishonest and fearful and self-centered and self-seeking, right? And again, like I said, the ego is trying to protect. It's trying to protect me. And so then I get to the first step, and when I talked the last time I was here, I talked about surrender, and I talked about how we get into surrender, or actually we get into compliance, and we think it's surrender. See, compliance is the enemy of surrender. So I was that guy that said, oh yeah, yes, my life is unmanageable. I'm an alcoholic. And I would answer these questions, but they were just to comply to what my sponsor was saying. I never understood them. In the first three steps, right, on page 63, it says now we are at step three. That means the first 62 pages of 104 pages are on steps one and two. And when I get to that surrender, I have to surrender completely. There can be nothing, nothing, I mean zero, in my mind, right? There can be no thoughts that if I do this or this happens or I make this much money or if I get my family back or get my job back or get my children back or any of this stuff. I have to admit complete defeat. I have to know that my life run by my will does not work and never has worked. Right? And the thing about it is if I don't admit that complete defeat and I have a problem with a power, which most of us do when we get here, I'll never open up my mind to the idea of that power. My mind is closed in step one when I get here. And with a closed mind, I'll never open it. I'll never find that power. Right? And so I have to surrender everything. My ideas about God, my ideas about religion, my ideas about you, about me, about everything. And when I do that, and when I did that, my mind opened up enough just for the idea of this power, right? And I found this power, and that's when my sponsor, or what I said earlier, started talking to me about you have to search Murph and you have to seek Murph, right? This is something that you have to start doing. And so I get to step three, and now I'm at step three where it's asking me to make a decision. But if I haven't surrendered completely and I haven't opened my mind to this power, I might as well not do step three. It's a complete waste of time, right? Complete waste of time. Because what am I turning my life over to? What am I turning my will over to, right? If people will say turn it over to the meetings or turn it over to the meetings or AA itself. And that can work, right? And it can work for a time, but it only can work if I've had that surrender. Because I'm not going to listen to you if my mind is closed, right? And so that's why, Thibault also talked about this absolute complete bottom that I have to hit for that surrender. Because we get a lot of people that are walking into Alcoholics Anonymous, and they look better than I do right now. Right, and there's no desperation, and it's hard for me to surrender if I'm not desperate. Right, it's hard for me to do these things that they're asking me to do in Alcoholics Anonymous if I'm not desperate for my life. If this isn't the most important thing to me, it's difficult for me to do these things. And I get to step three, and it's asking me to turn my will and my life, my thinking, and my actions over to the care of God. Right? What I was saying earlier, if I'm in a situation, I don't turn that situation over to God. I turn what I'm thinking about that situation over to God, because that's where the problem is. The situation's never the problem. And so I make this decision, but again, this decision and these things that I'm doing, right, are smashing my ego. This is another smashing of my ego. I'm saying that I need God in order to live a sober life, and that's a hard one for me, unless I'm surrendered. So I was never surrendered in the first 2 years. I was never surrendered in the 8 years. And the beautiful thing was that when I got to step four this time, I wasn't afraid. When I got to step four this time, I was thorough. And it was only because of the work that I had done prior to this step. People talk about this step and say, oh my God, the fourth step, it's just this awful thing and la-da-da. The fourth step is a fact-finding step. It's finding the facts about myself that are keeping me blocked from this power that's going to save my life. And so I do the rest of the steps, and I do five, I did four, and I got to my father, who I hated for my entire life, hated him, and I mean hated him. I went through the first two, times being sober, never getting rid of that resentment, ever, right? My dad was never in my life. He was absent from my life. He was a professional football player. My grandfather was a professional baseball player. I never had a ball thrown to me.
Five more minutes.
Thank you. I was so sad, right? But I got to this four step, and for the first time in this four step, because I had gotten that foundation, because my ego was at bay. See, the ego has this recuperative power that is unbelievable. And I get this 24 hours. I get this 24 hours, right? They call that spiritual, that reprieve. Right? That daily reprieve. Based on my spiritual, I say connection. Right? And if I'm not connected to God, if the conscious contact with God is not the most important thing in my life, and I fail to connect with God, which I do in the 11th step, my ego comes back. My ego's just sitting there waiting for me to be at my weakest point, and it's going to come back and it's going to tell me, Murph, I got it. I know what you can do. You know what the solution is. It's that drink or whatever it is that your solution is, right? And that's where my ego is coming back. So I have to keep my ego at bay. So every morning when I wake up, on awakening, the first thing I do is I get with God. God loves me so much, He will never enter my life without my permission. So I ask Him in every single morning, and I make a surrender every morning. I surrender to the fact that my life run on my will doesn't work. God, please direct my thinking. Let it be void of selfish, self-centered, self-seeking motives, dishonest motives. And I go through my day, and when I do that, and I remain conscious with God, things go well. But I will never be so spiritual as I stop being human. I'm going to fail. I'm going to falter. I'm going to make mistakes. Mistakes are portals to discovery. I love that. James Joyce. But the only way that happens is if I'm aware of them. And that's why in the 11th step, I also, when I retire, look back at my day. Where was I selfish? Where was I self-seeking? Where was I dishonest? Where was I fearful? And I ask God to take these thoughts about these things away from me, right? And I look at the good things I did in the day, because this isn't about bashing yourself. This is about building yourself and getting rid of the negative and filling it with positive. I work the steps to find the power. I practice the steps to keep the power. I have to do this. My sponsor, when we were on page 104, which is the last page of the 12th step, he looks at me and he goes, Murph, show me where it says the end. And I said, huh? He goes, show me where it says the end. And I go, well, it doesn't. He goes, exactly. This is a continuous program where I continue working these steps in my life, right, 10, 11, and 12, to stay unblocked. And to keep this power. So today, and I'm going to end it with this. Today, the most important thing in my life today is not Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a conscious contact with a God every day. And with that, Alcoholics Anonymous becomes this beautiful, wonderful thing. I enjoy working with others. I love taking people through the steps. I love it. I love working with my guys. I love it. I love, you know, giving and being selfless as much as I possibly can, right? But I need God in order for Alcoholics Anonymous to work. It can go away so fast. My life is beautiful. I love my life, right? I don't need you for my happiness. I don't have to compare myself to you for my happiness. I love everything about my life. And I don't have a lot, But what I have, I absolutely, absolutely, absolutely love. Wouldn't trade it with any, wouldn't trade my life with anybody because I have peace of mind. And you can take $1 million in this hand and $1 million in this hand, and I would take peace of mind every single time. So I hope I said something today or tonight for you that that helped you or that you can take with you. I'll leave it with one of my favorite quotes. Because I don't need you for that anymore. I love you, and I like people, and I love people, and I need that also, but I don't need it to be okay. And so I always say, you know, don't let the key to your happiness be in someone else's pocket. Never put it in somebody else's pocket. It's all inside of me, you know, and I get that through God. So thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Murph. I'm going to...